raring to go. And he will be on this first hour sometime between now and 2 o'clock. And normally he's in the second hour. So if you've got your gardening questions, your grass problems, your tree isn't growing, whatever, keep that in mind. He will be along this hour, along with the man who is certainly the top man in Atlantic City this week. It's the week of the Miss America pageant. We'll check in with him, find out how preparations are going. Next hour, David Cassidy will be in to talk about his career, the years on the Partridge Family, and his latest endeavor, some legitimate acting. Not that his acting on the Partridge Family was not that, but certainly it's a departure from what he is known for. So he'll be along. We'll be fielding your phone calls, taking your suggestions, answering your questions, solving your problems, all in all, doing our best to keep you on top of what's happening this 10th day of September. Regular news reports, updated weather reports from Jim Geyer, you name it. If it's going on, it'll be going on our midday magazine. Special visitor in our town. He's downstairs performing in a play called, are you ready for this? In case you haven't heard it yet, we want you to be aware of it. Little Johnny Jones. Matter of fact, our next guest was becoming, and as a matter of fact, I think was a legend in his own time as part of a television Partridge Family series. He was a teenage idol. I don't know if he likes that expression or not, but let's face it, that was a fact. He had recorded 18 gold records. He sold out stadiums wherever he went. I think even the Houston Astrodome. He came here to Edgewater Park, and there was almost, if it wasn't a riot, it was a near riot. It was the kind of fame where fans would cry when they would see him performing. It required him to hide on the floor of cars to get away from the places that he was appearing in. And now it's a decade later. The screaming teenagers are gone, hopefully replaced by applauding adults, maybe some of the old fans, maybe some new people. Let us turn back the pages a decade and introduce him as he would have been introduced had he been appearing live somewhere around the country.
Okay. Give me a C.
Cassidy, does that bring back memories or strike terrific fear into your heart?
As a matter of fact, my palms started sweating when you started playing that, yeah. Yes, that's very true. Boy, that's a rude awakening for the afternoon. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Were those really good days or frightening days or what kind of experiences for you?
I can look back upon those times and think about experiences such as what we just listened to, and that stuff was fun. It was always interesting and very exciting, and as you can certainly well imagine, being at the focal point of all that energy is an incredible experience. Being able to touch people like that and to move people like that is a wonderful experience. A lot of it artistically was very frustrating to me, and I became very lost in that whole trip, you know, and I felt like I lost myself and my identity. So I look back upon those times now, in retrospect, and I just really remember the good stuff, you know, and moments like that, you know, I just feel very fortunate. I feel extremely lucky to have been able to be a part of that kind of an experience.
Did you ever figure out why, when some of your fans were not only watching you, it happened with Elvis, it happened with the Beatles, mm-hmm. that they would actually break down, become so emotional that the performance, seeing you in person, would cause tears?
Yeah, it was tears. What it is just, I at least it, for me, and what I was able to perceive in going through 4 or 5 years of watching young girls mostly, they get so emotionally involved and have got their entire image of what someone they want to love is, and they kind of hang that whole image on you, and they get so carried away actually seeing you in the flesh after seeing you on bubblegum cards and lunch boxes and, you know, buying your dresses. And
there was David Cassidy bubblegum.
Sure, yeah. Magazines. Dresses, no less. You know? You have no idea the shock I got when I got a sort of a gag birthday present. And it was a David Cassidy size suit dress. Matter of fact, I still have it.
Yes, never can tell.
I'm wearing it now, folks. Yes.
that's an interesting explanation that you are maybe their ideal and finally seeing someone.
Well, yeah, and also having posters of having had posters of me all over the place, and the reality of actually being confronted with the person right there in front of you, you know, actually seeing the person move in person after seeing him on television and listening to him on the records and so forth. I think so much is built up in there. You know, they're at a place in time in their lives when they are very volatile in that respect, emotionally.
Obviously, the popularity coming on the heels of the successful television show, The Partridge Family. Mm-hmm. But prior to that, you had done a little work on Broadway, but as far as I can tell, you really didn't decide to go into showbiz until the comparatively late age of 18. You were out in California growing up. You moved back to New York.
Mm-hmm.
Why the late change, the decision there?
Well, I wanted to at least finish high school. I thought I owed that to my mother, you know, and as opposed to raising a high school dropout, which I actually came very close to dropping out of high school.
Well, you were cutting a lot of classes.
I was cutting a lot of classes. That's absolutely true.
You were experimenting. You're experimenting with some drugs?
No, that's not true.
Nothing?
No.
Nothing at all?
No, well, I mean, experimenting with drugs.
It was an age that...
The 60s was an age.
The peer pressure to even do something like that, I would assume, would be strong anyway.
Well, yeah, when one says, I experimented with drugs, I mean, it takes on that whole umbrella of, what are drugs? What are we talking about? I mean, you know, if you're talking about going to a party one night and they're passing around a joint when you're 16 years old, yeah. I was there, and I participated in that. And the 60s were definitely oriented towards that social and sexual revolution was going on. But that was not who I was. I mean, that's sort of some press agent's way of building up some contrast in an image, I think, you know, and there was a lot of that because of what my image was. But basically, I had always, when I saw my father on the stage when I was 3 years old, I decided that I wanted to be in show business. I saw him in a show called Wish You Were Here. I can remember driving home in the car that night in 1953. And, 1953.
Remember those, that was prior to the Beach Boys and Buddy Holly and all those people.
Oh, yeah. It was prior to a lot of stuff that's going on. The reality of 1950 just hit me. Sorry, I didn't mean to drift off there. Anyway, I can remember being where I was when I said to my mother, I remember going, being so excited and so thrilled having just seen my dad on the stage, I really want to do that. And from that moment on, I just knew I was always going to do it. I never had any thoughts going through school like, what am I going to be when I grow up? I just knew what I wanted to do. And when I was 17, I started working with the L.A. Theater Company. And I'd done a couple of productions with them. And I was taking drama in high school, which is one of the reasons I stuck with it, I suppose. School, that is. And when I graduated from high school, 2 weeks afterwards, I went back to New York and got myself an agent and took a part-time job in the textile industry and in the mailroom and started going out on auditions. And about 1,000 auditions later, I got a job.
It was a small part?
Not that small.
Was it Fig Leaf or Falling?
Yeah, and it was kind of, I played Dorothy Loudon and Barry Nelson's son, and it was not really a small part. I had three songs, actually. One with, like duets, and quite a number of scenes. It was actually, for the first role, it was quite a good-sized part, yeah.
The play didn't last all that long, though.
No, a guy from CBS Films saw me in it, and as soon as it closed, brought me out to Los Angeles to make screen tests for for a movie that never was made. And from that, I ended up, some people over at Universal saw the screen test I did. And I started getting television work from that. Marcus Welby, I did about 10 or 12 guest shots, like leads in dramatic shows. And
well, you did one medical center that got you an Emmy nomination.
No.
Wasn't it?
That's not true.
You played the part of a hemophiliac?
No, that was a Marcus Welby.
Oh, all right. Wrong show, but did you get an Emmy nomination?
I did not.
You should have gotten an Emmy nomination.
Thank you. There was an awful lot of talk about that. As a matter of fact, I can remember at the time that one show was really responsible for getting me sort of to the head of the class and, you know, amongst young actors at that point. And from that, because of that, that show, an awful lot of people saw it. I got the pilot to do The Partridge Family and a number of other jobs from that one.
David Cassidy is with us this afternoon. And by the way, if you have any questions for David, you may recall him from his days on that television show, maybe from some of his appearance around here, buying his records, or from some of the things
or
that he's
standing
doing.
Standing on a corner, hitchhiking.
That's right.
Waiting for a bus.
875-4476, our direct telephone line. For David Cassidy and Warren Pierce. And before we do anything else, how about a quick trip to McDonald's? Are you ready?
Hey.
Let's go.
Am I ready?
All right.
McDonald's, you'd think they could afford a better commercial than that.
We got to check the weather, too, before we do anything else. You want to do that?
Well, sure. Let's check the weather.
I know you're waiting for good golf weather.
I've been waiting and for some good golf weather.
I think this is the stuff you're looking for, David.
Okay, let's see. Weather forecast.
Is this Little Johnny Jones, or is David Cassidy, or is this Keith Partridge, or... I hate to have you have an identity problem here.
No, I don't want to have an identity. What do you want me to read here? The WJR Weather Center forecast.
This is cold. This is not easy to do.
That's right. For Greater Detroit, mostly sunny and windy this afternoon. High temperature near 80. Tonight... Fair to partly cloudy, low temperature near 60. Friday's outlook, increasing cloudiness through the day.
Uh-oh.
Still warm.
Yes.
High temperature 80 to 83. I don't want to hear about the clouds. You know what I mean?
I know what you mean. The winds are now.
It's a weather report.
Southwesterly at 20. Don't rip that up because they'll be very upset. Southwesterly winds at 20. Was it windy when you were coming up?
Seemed a little windy, yeah.
All right. Humidity is 55. It's partly sunny and 77 officially at Metro. What I want to do is play your first hit song.
Oh, okay.
What was your first hit song?
My first hit song was I Think I Love You.
Yes.
It was also the record of the year. And I was embarrassed to accept the record of the year because the runner-up to it was Let It Be.
And, the Beatles.
Yeah, and it was their last single. And I later told John Lennon, who I actually became not really friends with, but I guess I could call him my friend. I spent some time and dinner with him a couple of times, and I later told him, and they were such an influence on me, and they really wrote the soundtrack to my youth. The idea that their last record, this last single that they had put out together, was a runner-up to my first one. It just seemed somehow or another, I don't know, sacrilegious or something. You know, I couldn't feel real good about it. However, I felt real good about the fact that the record was that successful. And
did it have its premiere? Did it make its debut as Ricky Nelson used to do on the Nelsons on the television show and then?
No, it was a hit before the television show was on the air, actually. But the wonderful thing about, there's always a story that goes along with it. This was the first record I ever recorded. I'd never been in a recording studio in my life. And what they did was, the track when I'd sing on the record,
mm-hmm.
when I'd sing on the tape, which would go right on the tape, and then when they were mixing, they would speed it up to regular speed so I would sound a little younger. Also, because it was the first time I'd ever sung on a record, I wasn't really thinking about what I was singing. And I suppose if I'd really been bright, I would have gone back to that and continued not thinking about what I was singing about, because it was so ridiculously successful.
They wanted you to sing younger. You also were, I think, when you were doing The Partridge Family, 20 years old, although you were playing the part of a 16-year-old.
Yeah, which is part of it. You know, I listen to occasionally, if I hear in the studio, studio one of these records. It's hard for me to listen to it. So
well, you're going to have to listen to this one because we're going to turn the speakers up very loud.
Crank it up.
David Cassidy's first hit song, Remember When.
I'm thinking and right in the middle of a good dream. And all at once I've got something that keeps knocking at my brain. Before I go insane, I hold my pillow to my head and spring up in my bed, screaming out the words I dread.
He sat here and listened to that. It's not really embarrassing, but I know if you had your choice, I think, when you were David Cassidy, beginning with the Partridge Family, you wouldn't have sung songs like that because that wasn't your kind of music.
Correct. That was music that was designed for a television show. That part of the problem that I was going through is that people related to me as that character because I was singing that music. They thought that was my music, you know? And that was part of the frustration, artistically, part of the frustration I was going through.
But interestingly, the people who created the Partridge Family are also the same folks who gave us the Monkees, and we're going to, in fact, use other singers over your voices when the show got on the air, and you weren't going to sing.
That's true. As a matter of fact, on the pilot, the original pilot, which is one of the shows that's aired, the only show that you do not hear my voice is the show that we made, which is called the pilot, which they sold to Network. And on that, they got studio singers to come in and do it. When the show sold, they then were going to go in and make records and go in and make music for the show. And I said, hey, fellas, kind of silly me doing this because I do sing, you know. And they thought, gee, you know, maybe he's got something there. And the rest was history.
History, as they say. 875-4476. We'll get to some of your questions in 60 seconds. I have the guy who wrote it on. That is now officially the New York State theme. Oh,
yeah.
This guy, he is the guy, that fellow that writes all the commercials like Michelob, the Weekend, and just the fantastic commercials.
Was his name Ron Dante?
No, it's not.
Okay.
He's the guy, though, who sings a lot of the commercials.
Well, I know Ron. As a matter of fact, when I Think I Love You came out, when I went on the promotional tour with that record, Ron Dante had released his first and, I think, only solo album and single. And he was the guy who was the voice of the Cufflinks.
Cufflinks was a Tracy?
Yeah, correct.
Right.
Memory.
Sure.
And
The Archies.
Oh, yes.
Which had Sugar, 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 Sugar. 7 million selling single all over the world, which was a phenomenal record in terms of sales. And he's also the voice, he's been the voice of Pepsi and all kinds of things, you know, and, you know, just for years. And he had such a successful business. He also started producing Barry Manilow and co-produced Barry Manilow. I don't know if he's still doing it, but that's who that fellow was. So anyway.
Fella here at WJR is David Cassidy, and we have a phone caller on the line from Dearborn. How are you this afternoon?
Sorry?
What did you want to talk to David
What's
about?
What's your name?
Sandy Boy.
She sounds very nervous. I want you to calm down, Sandy.
Calm down, Sandy.
Calm down, Sandy.
Hi, Sandy.
Hi.
Are you sitting down, Sandy?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Go ahead, Sandy.
Okay. First question is, you used to associate with the people you worked with on the Parker family.
Absolutely not. No, of course I do. I speak with Shirley all the time. Hopefully, she's going to be in Toronto, I understand, while I'm here in Detroit. I think in another week or two, and she's doing a nightclub act, which is she's been really successful. So I'm going to try and go up and see her if I can. I see Susan. Susan came and saw us in Los Angeles when I was doing Little Johnny Jones. We opened there, and it was wonderful. I run into Dave Madden occasionally. The kids I don't see too much.
Are the reruns still on?
Oh, yeah. All over the place.
Not in Detroit anymore.
Not in Detroit. Well, they were on last week.
Well, they canceled it.
They canceled it.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, you know, what happens is when you do 100-and-some shows, they run out of shows, and when they've been in syndication for 6 years, they can only put them on so many times. They keep bringing them back. You know, they put it on, they bring it back.
One more quick question, dear boy.
Okay. What are you planning to do now since you're off the Parks family?
I'm in the show, you see. Let me explain this to you a little bit. I'm here in Detroit in a show at the Fisher Theater now through October 3rd in a show called Little Johnny Jones, and that's who I am. I'm playing Little Johnny Jones. I am then going to Dallas for another 3 weeks and plan on taking the show into Broadway.
Little Johnny Jones, of course, is a remake of an old 1904 musical.
Yeah, it's a revival of a musical that George M. Cohan wrote, which has a couple of his biggest hits in it. And revivals are very big on Broadway right now and have been for the last, like, year and a half. They brought back some really terrific shows. And I think that, I think perhaps the rest of the country is not all that used to seeing revivals. I think that it's rather unusual, but they're very successful. There have been a number of very successful shows, revivals on Broadway.
She was wondering what you've been doing since the Partridge Family. Really, since you were coming on board with Little Johnny Jones, you haven't done very much. There were some guest TV appearances. You kind of just disappeared.
Well, I left the business for about 3 years in 75. And when I left after that intro that that you gave me coming in, or that he gave me at one of my concerts, that was one of the last concerts that I did. I was playing those outdoor stadiums and things, and I really had made up my mind that I was going to stop touring and stop perpetuating that whole image. And why don't I get these headphones off?
All right,
they're talking fool. I'd really made up my mind that that was going to be it. You know, I felt emotionally and personally and professionally, for me to have a career and to continue a career, that I needed to leave that phase of my career behind.
And there was no doubt that I assume you were typed as a teenage rock and roll
thing. That's right. That's right. And indeed, I was certainly typed as that, but I, you know, my career took a very sharp left turn. I was an actor. And when I came back, when I decided I wanted to work and come back into the business, I really had to make a choice, you know, as to what and where I wanted to put my energy and my priorities. And that was going back to acting first. And first thing I did was a movie for television, a two-hour police story, which I was nominated for an Emmy for. That was...
I knew you'd eventually get one.
Yes.
After the hemophiliac on Marcus Welby, I knew for David Cassidy there is an Emmy nomination coming sometime in his career.
Yes, well, Hopefully not the last.
Let's take some more calls. Gross Point on our direct phone line. David Cassidy is standing by in our studios here at WJR. What were you wondering about?
I wasn't wondering. I wanted to inform the people of Detroit that sitting right beside you right now, Warren, is the very first person that ever appeared on stage at Pine Knob.
That's absolutely true. That's absolutely true. I opened Pine Knob. Were you there?
I was.
Well, how nice. What's your name?
My name is Mary.
Hi, Mary.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Good.
And I think it's a marvelous change for your career that you're now at the Fisher.
Thank you.
I will enjoy seeing you there. Best of luck.
Thank you so much. It's lovely.
Okay, bye
now. Okay, bye-bye.
When you decided to get back into acting and chose Little Johnny Jones, there must have been some concern on your part, realizing that people like James Cagney, Fred Astaire, Cohan himself were singing the songs that you would sing in this play, Yankee Doodle, Give My Regards to Broadway.
Yeah. Now, I think one of the problems with the built into this particular role for anybody is the fact that you have to deal and contend with the stigma of having those legends. I mean, Cagney in the movie Yankee Doodle Dandy, although they only did about 14 minutes from the movie, I think, 14 or 15 minutes of the movie, was dedicated to him as playing Cohan, doing Little Johnny Jones.
Have a little excerpt, as a matter of fact.
Excerpt?
Excerpt from that film.
That's quite all right.
You got me there, Cassidy. Listen to this.
Yankee Doodle Dandy, Yankee Doodle do or die. A real live nephew of my Uncle Sam, born on the 4th of July.